So what do these phrases really mean? As above, so it is below. Man, know thyself. If we take to study these ideas, how can we make them useful? The phrases have probably been around a lot longer than any of the ancient books that they've ever been found in. But what do they mean in the light of the ancient wisdom? What do they mean in the light of theosophy? Well, theosophy is the philosophy of unity. These two ideas, they can be seen as two aspects of the same idea. Our pursuit of the study or pursuit to understand these ideas entails consideration of the third object of the theosophical movement, which reads, to investigate the hidden mysteries of nature under every aspect possible and the psychic and spiritual powers latent in man especially. So let's take a look at the Hermetic phrase, as above, so it is below. One portal we have found into the meaning of this idea is the consideration that man is the microcosm of the great manifested universe, or the macrocosm. The universe and all universes in it is worked and guided, says the secret doctrine, from within. The universe and all universes within it is worked and guided from within. As above, so below. Man, the microcosm, is the living witness then to universal law. How? Well, he is the product of universal law, law that releases itself through a concatenation of organisms, these organisms ever evolving under the one rule of law. If the universe is the cause of man, and if under law, like produces like, then man cannot be anything other than a universe. Okay, so we begin to grasp that man is a microcosm. But really, what is man? Does this mean that the macrocosm, like man, has two arms, two legs, etc.? Well, or is it not that literal? We find in the teachings that every external motion of man, every external motion of man, whether physical or mental, is produced and preceded by the power of an internal feeling, an emotion, will, volition, thought, internal movement. Call these inner realities what you will. Man, every external motion of man is driven by an internal motion. So too with the great universe. The whole cosmos is animated, guided, and controlled by magnificent hierarchies of sentient beings. Each hierarchy with a mission to perform. And who, no matter if we call them Dion Shohans or archangels or forces of nature, they are the messengers in the sense that they are agents of karmic law. The hierarchies are agents of cosmic law or divine will, call it as we may. So, okay, we can grasp the idea of correspondence between the microcosm and the macrocosm in that both are commonly proceeding through evolution by an inward guiding force. There's something in common. So we can conclude then that the macrocosm and the microcosm do not necessarily mean the universe and the man that we see with our physical eyes. They're not necessarily what we imagine through the use of the lower mind. Rather, these two terms, macrocosm and microcosm, may signify correspondences as they exist between two different organisms. In other words, by correspondence of principles and analogies of experience, we can apprehend the common wholeness of the universe and therefore of man. Maybe. All right. So then, man, know thyself. Well, who or what exactly is man, this microcosm? Are we talking about the body? No, the body is external. It is sustained by food and it changes every moment. But could there also be a body that does not change? Is man the mind? Well, we all change our mind from moment to moment, and the mind typically takes on the shape of our outer environment and changes with that outer environment. So we are told that change cannot see change, but we know these changes occur in our mind and our bodies. So we must not be the mind nor the body. Nevertheless, through even all changes of mind, man retains the power to guide that mind from within and bring about the extension of that mind, as well as a more fully useful physical brain, the force being guided from within. Okay, so then what's above the mind? Would we call that, what would we call it? Would we call that man? Would we call it soul or spirit? Well, really, these words can be easily dismissed by popular culture if we were trying to talk to someone and explain this idea. But one helpful word would be consciousness. Who can deny that consciousness is? So for the purposes of this discussion, let's take that word consciousness as comprising all that man is. The consciousness is the immortal perceiver. The consciousness is true vision that looks directly upon ideas. Not the kind of vision that sees man as a physical body, nor that sees the universe as stars in the sky, but that vision which sees the purpose for the universe and the correspondences among the greater and the lesser, which both serve as the means of the fulfillment of universal purpose. What is that purpose? We're told the evolution and experience of soul. So, okay, man, know thyself. If man is the immortal perceiver, if man is consciousness itself, then why do we interact in this world with so many different kinds of men and so many different kinds of minds? Well, from the power to perceive flows all forces, the inner latent forces of man. From the power to perceive flows all forces. All forces are directed by the larger instrument, by the largest instrument in the vehicle. All forces are directed by mind. And each individual mind is comprised of ideas held, true or false, as the ideas may be. The ideas comprise the mind. And then bodily action is guided by the ideas. So as we know, there are conflicting ideas about who and what man is, or said differently, as we know that different men and women identify themselves as and with different external conditions, so there are what we may call the differing minds and differing actions. But the difference is not man. It is not man born of nature. The difference is in his instruments, the chief instrument of which is the mind. Like a mirror, the mind gathers dust while it reflects and needs the gentle breeze of soul wisdom to brush away the dust of our illusions. In this sense, soul wisdom is the process of gaining a truer realization of the self. The self, as microcosmic perceiver, must turn his mind inward and dwell on the self within. As one dwells on the self within, he becomes more conscious. He becomes more conscious of the realization of it. And perhaps, as he dwells within, he perhaps comes to a more clear understanding of who he is. So these are just some ideas that we wanted to start off with. I'm sure you all came together with other ideas and contributions on this topic. Any questions are welcome. M.H.?
Yes, we just had a clarification question. We're not sure if we misunderstood the speaker. Initially said that the cosmos develops man, but we thought it was the opposite, that it was man's impressions and the hierarchies and all of that. So we just kind of got a little confused, if that clarified.
Sure, and it can be a confusing subject. Let's review that. So the comment was, man, the microcosm, is the living witness to this universal law. He is the product of universal law. So in this sense, it would be man as individual, man as the microcosm. He's the product of universal law that releases itself into manifestation, into and among the organisms, all evolving and contributing to the evolution of those organisms. So in this sense, the universe gives birth to man, the individual, the microcosm. And if that's the case, the individual has to be a universe if like produces like. These are the ideas. Anyone else want to help with that clarification? Okay. SL?
For us in the West, we identify that expression, man know thyself, with the inscription written above the temple of Apollo in Delphi. But we've read that the entire inscription is man know thyself, and knowing that ye are gods, act accordingly. What does it mean that man is a god and should act accordingly? What does it mean, man is a god?
So if the rest of that phrase is knowing that the our gods act accordingly, well, certainly on the one hand, most people would think of God as being the driving force from within. And that's exactly the statement in theosophy, that it is man who is that. So if we act from that basis and recognize ourselves to be that God humbly, then wouldn't it be true that we would come to a certain sense of awe of the responsibility that we have? So when the individual comes to a realization that he does have that responsibility, and that he is connected with and the cause of everything and everyone around him, then chances are he'll be thinking differently, he'll be acting differently to act as and with the self of all. MDW, did you have your hand up a minute ago?
You know, it's the little aphorism that we learn in theosophy school is children of light as ye go forth, seek to do gentle service to all that lives. So, you know, we are limitless possibilities. It's just that we have to imagine what that is. And, you know, it's all about the mind. And we have to learn to become devoted, make our mind devoted, devoted to something higher, something and not so concentrated on the body, but on that aspect of ourselves that's more eternal, or that is eternal.
Yes, and the statement was made in that phrase, seek to do gentle service to all that lives. Isn't that directly related to this subject? In the voice of the silence, we find the phrase, self-knowledge is of loving deeds the child. Couldn't we say the same thing? Self-knowledge is of gentle service the child. So as we act as an of the self, we come to a fuller realization of the self, who we really are. LG and then LT.
Well, we talked about that there's no two minds alike. There's no two blades of grass the same. But yet, as was indicated, we all come from the same, we all are rays or aspects of that one self. So in the voice of the silence, it mentions the phrase depth and breadth is needed to draw us to the diamond soul. So is there an importance in this diversity of mind, in this idea of service, that we need this diversity of mind? What is the importance of it?
So when we're talking about the diversity, the depth and breadth, and how important diversity is, what's the importance of it? Well, to start with, we'd like to offer this out to the group, but to start with, we can say, as it is above, so it is below, and accept that as a truth. The question here is this statement true? As it is below, so it is above. And that actually depends one's perception. Can we see that as true? Really, it depends on the use of mind. If we're operating and thinking from below above first, if we're operating in particulars and trying to draw conclusions, universal conclusions from that, then the diversity is not as much a help as it would be if first we were operating from universal principles. Operating from universal principles, we can see the unity in the diversity and the value of the diversity. We can see the value of the symphony of many instruments. But it's got to be from above down. Any other ideas along those lines? MD. MDW.
As above, so below. We think that's they're telling us something, that how we think is how we live, or how we, or what materializes. It's how we think, how our thinking is. Are we positive? Are we nurturing? Are we trying to be harmonious? Are we trying to be, trying to help? Always trying to help. Who are we? Who are we? You know, what are we? We're light. We witness. We all of this. We're a witness to.
So you know, that idea of as above, so it is below. when we reverse it, we were saying it depends on the thoughts that one holds to be true. You know, a perfected mind, to a perfected mind, as it is below, so it is above, sees the perfect correspondences in that and can know it. But to the average mind of the world, when you say that, people often will think, as we said, well, as above, so below, does that mean the universe is shaped like a big man? If the microcosm is the man and the macrocosm is the universe. So it's all a matter of what ideas do we hold to be true, and what do we hold as the reality, and what do we hold to be true about false illusions? JS, did you have your hand up a minute ago? Nope. LT.
Thank you. Lovely conversation here. As our speakers contributing in today's lecture and studies, I've been jotting down these notes, and I wanted to share that with you, if that's okay. In the micro and the macro man, consciousness is manifested, crystallized, driven by the will and the purpose, as my understanding. That consciousness is the soul spiritual and the evolutionary ladder of the man. Every soul spirit is a star, the cosmos, and the man, the body, united by the universal will, revolving and evolving with one another, repelling other forces or uniting in the cellular neighborhood. For example, in marriage, for a star is manifested in this crystallized world. How lovely the concept that our bonds and the will enlighten us and our stars shine brighter. Our connections is our dance in the cosmos, so above and so below. When man understands this concept, the question here is, what is our relation to this earth and this solar system? Every man has its frequency, its vibration. Unity in mind allows the space and creation of the grand cosmological concert. And that's the beauty of this man and this universe. I think it's beautiful, this conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for the contributions. MH.
Yeah, in regards to the question that was put to the group regarding as below, so above, we wonder if we can think of it as Mr. Judge talks about the dynamo that man is. And the whole idea with karma being part of the law, and law rules all. So couldn't we look at man being that dynamo, causing karma, developing karma, and in the future, isn't that going to determine, like, the cosmos, so to speak?
Does that make sense? Yes, we would agree. You know, one who considers the ideas and thinks along the principles of theosophy in most universal way, can see that as it is above, so, or as it is below, so it is above. We can see that to be true if we can get behind, obviously, the form. So the idea that that mankind is the dynamo that we hear Mr. Judge talk about, certainly he is the driving force behind everything that he does. And he is more than, you know, he as the perceiver participates in, let's look at it this way. Man is not, let's not use the term, man is not a part of the universe. The universe is not made up of parts in that sense, because that implies that man is not fully a universe. But if we can look at the universe as a unity, one monad, comprised of monads, and that every monad, every man, in that sense, all monads, but every man is a whole in himself, then it would seem a little easier to grasp the conception, because the search for who we are, man, know thyself, the search for who we are can be corresponded to, like, this man's search for himself is like the part searching for the whole. when the part comes to the realization that it is a whole, he has found the truth. And he realizes that he's participating in the whole by being the whole himself. And he has found the truth of himself. MHS, follow up? MHW?
Okay, yes, yeah. Thank you. We're having a hard time saying thinking specifically, is it strictly as above, so below? Because we can also, we're also understanding that it can be as below, so above. So we're just, can it be both?
That's our point. Can we perceive it to be both? And the answer theosophically is yes, as it is below, so it is above. But to recognize that, we have to hold these true ideas and discard false ideas of who we are. Because if we really think that we're the poor, miserable sinners, and then draw some kind of a conclusion, therefore the above supports that, well, then the above must be something that created me because I couldn't have created myself. So it depends on how we think. The universal ideas of theosophy are the kind of butter the skid to get into that mode of thought and see it. We have to be able to get past the form. SL, there was a hand.
To go back to the previous question about the importance of diversity of minds, it makes one think that maybe man cannot know himself or thyself without the help of other minds, that it is only through the investigation of diversity of ideas, even those held by our foes, that we come to a realization of truth. We need diversity of ideas and opinions and minds to complement our own view, for any one of us has perhaps a limited perception of the whole.
So then, essentially what's being said here is, if a number of individuals participate together in the investigation to find out, you know, man, know thyself, all of whom come from different ideas, bases for ideas, walks of life, etc., then if they do have certain ideas that they hold in common and operate together with, could they not participate in investigating who and what they are and who and what they're not by participating in this collective mind to prove to oneself the truth of the idea of who we really are? In certain ways, we wonder if that's not part of what the ULT experience is. Sharing in the universals and coming to the realization of it by recognizing that we're not the particulars. JS, the hand.
Yeah, the puzzle becomes if, as free thinkers and seekers, we choose to identify with only the diversity, then we're measuring with the rubber ruler that too many Aristotelian thinkers can trip up on. In other words, we know that there's white light passes through the prism of manifestation and becomes this beautiful array of colors, but the colors are not the oneness. The colors are emanations, they're variations, differentiations. The true ruler, not the rubber ruler, but the true principle ruler, is above. It's the white light. And so the oneness is reflected in the manifestation, but not all of the manifestation lends itself to that Platonic ability to think universally. We can get really stuck in the mire, blinded by the differentiation.
True. We can get stuck in the mire, blinded by differentiation, and isn't that where patience and compassion and sometimes downright silence comes into play? comes into play.
Well said.
LG?
We read in preparing for today's talk, Mr. Crosby's article, Man Visible and Invisible. And in there, we see that the three worlds exist in the nature of man as a being. Both the divisible and indivisible and the supreme spirit exist within each and every being. So what are these three worlds? What can we understand of that exist?
So what can we understand of these three worlds? Well, let's start with, if we are the perceiver and the perceiver is constant and immortal, then we participated in the creation / formation of this world in which we live. We were here before it, we're the perceiver after it. So the process of the evolution of the planet itself is the process of spirit slowly, regularly involving itself into matter. And with each stage that we involve at first into matter, we create for ourselves bodies with sensations and faculties and abilities and energies that give us the ability to operate on that plane. So we're at the state now of having involved down to the lowest, most dense form, and yet we're beyond that on our way back up. Well, on our way down, we don't leave those vehicles behind. They're all within us. Just as the earth is sevenfold, the one that we see is the lowest, the physical, so too is the man. So then we come to this idea, well, what are these three worlds? And for the purpose of discussion, we'll call them three. HBB talks about man being triune. You know, there's the physical man, there's the electromagnetic man, which precedes and antedates, precedes and is around after the physical man. And then there is that which broods above both, which seems it would be the perceiver. So these three worlds in which man operates or has operated and can operate as he perfects himself and is able to operate on all planes. She says that really in time, by individual effort, that one can blend that electromagnetic with the perceiver and thus create an immortal conscious being. So we don't know if that answered, but if someone could help us. Yes, SL? That's a start. Could you unmute, SL?
We're thinking upon those words of so the three divisions were the divisible, the indivisible, and that which broods above them both. So if we look at our natures, the divisible part, we see that we have physical bodies, we have emotional natures, we have ideas, we have sensations. All these are divisible. They come and go. They're different from other human beings. But there's an indivisible part of our nature, which we are, where we're thinking beings. And it's indivisible in the same, it remains the same thinking being throughout all our lives, in spite of all the changes of our emotional nature and the physical body. And not only that, but all human beings we come to are also indivisible, spiritual thinking beings like ourselves. And then that which broods above it all, as was pointed out in the previous contribution there, is spirit, or the power to know, the consciousness itself. So that's a good key to understand how we are above so below or below so above, because the universe itself has its spiritual, its divisible part and its indivisible part of nature.
Thank you. LT?
Thank you for clarifying that. That definitely put it into a better perspective for me as well. I do wanted to speak on ZZ's contribution, if somebody would like to read on that, but I think that ties in beautifully with this conversation, if that's okay.
Sure. Let's take that. As within, so without. From the perspective of unity, do Aristotle and Lao Tzu contrast, respectively? Knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. Knowing others is intelligence. Knowing yourself is true wisdom. So these are what he puts forth. LT, you had a comment on that?
I think it goes to speak on the same note, and maybe if somebody can, shine light on the situation, or.
Well, that the comment, you know, from the perspective of unity, do Aristotle and Lao Tzu contrast, respectively? We're not authorities on either of their teachings, but our understanding is Lao Tzu was a teacher of the ancient wisdom, whereas Aristotle more or less kind of flipped it on its head and sees the world in which we live as the reality rather than the spiritual principles. So the question is, do they contrast? Well, they probably both contrast and yet can be fit together so as to complement each other. And that complementation comes when one understands the right thoughts and is able to recognize how as below, so above really can work. In other words, is thinking right from universal principles, which our understanding is that's what Lao Tzu was all about, Taoism. Okay, we have three. Yes, LG first, and then the other two.
But what comes to mind in that is, oh gosh, where did it go? The thoughts, the cause and effect. Okay, so Aristotle was looking at effects, particulars. Lao Tzu was looking for causes. And so we need to understand it from that point of view. Both are valid. There is effects and there's causes. They're both required. They're both necessary. But what is the relationship and how are we to understand cause and effect?
Well, so the question is then, let's take a look at it. If in fact Aristotle and Lao Tzu complement each other, if these ideas are complementary, how do we look at cause and effect? Well, the philosophy teaches that an adept can look upon an effect and know the cause. He can look upon a cause and know all the effects that will emanate from it. So there's a certain reality there that there's no difference between the two in certain ways, but on this plane of manifestation, you're dealing with time and space, cause and effect. So they may appear not to be logical and the same, but in certain ways they are the same, just as the idea of the tree emanates, you know, the tree comes from the acorn. LT. I mean, excuse me, MW, MDW.
Well, where does the cause come from? Where does the cause come from? It comes from the mental plane. And if it comes from the mental plane, as above, so below. If it manifests on the mental plane, it will manifest on the physical plane. That's why studying these ideas expand our scope of understanding and our viewpoint. So we're trying to change our mind.
Thank you. And MHW had her hand up. That's next.
We just had a question in regards to ZZ's, the part, the section where it goes, knowing others is intelligence. And we understand knowing yourself is true wisdom. But how do we actually know another? What they're expressing outwardly doesn't necessarily, isn't necessarily what is actually going on inside. So
right. So how do we know another? Well, isn't it true that, the more, the better that we know ourselves, the more we can understand another, to the point where a Mahatma has done the work and knows himself thoroughly such that he can look into the heart of another and know their motive. So is that pure intelligence? Well, maybe it's probably the highest intellection that is used. So in that way, perhaps it is a sense of intelligence. SL, you had your hand up?
So Aristotle, as was pointed out, is going from particulars to universals, from below to above. And Lao Tzu is going from universals to particulars, from above, below. Now, they are contrasts, but so are spirit and matter. So are cause and effect. If we lose sight of the reality that spirit and matter are two aspects of the same one. Cause and effect are two aspects of the same reality. The cause, the effect is manifested, is inherent in the cause. It's potential in the cause. And the cause contains the germs of the effect that will come. So it's one reality. So yes, they're contrasting, but they can complement one another if, as we go from particulars to universals, we don't lose sight, we don't get lost in the forest with all the trees that we see. We have to hold on to some universal idea to put all these particulars into perspective.
Thank you. So the message there is, yes, if we're operating from universals, we can understand the particulars and see how they complement. But if we get stuck in the particulars, we often may be drawing conclusions that are only apparently true, but really are not. LG and then MW.
Well, that brings to mind, to avoid getting lost in the forest, it's important that we have an understanding, as is written in the chat box, about karma, to understand the three fundamentals, that they're key for us. If the secret doctrine is the forest, then the three fundamentals are what keep us from getting lost in there. So it's important to understand those.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the contribution here is if the plethora of information and ideas in the SD are the particulars, then the universals, the fundamental propositions, are those which, if we start with, we can better create a philosophy or understand the philosophy in terms of all this information and make more sense of it. Thank you. Ben MTW, you have your hand?
Well, just on that same note, the fundamental idea that the universe is one, that we are one with the universe, that everything is connected, and we have, just to consider the idea of deity or what God is, and to contemplate that and to broaden your scope of understanding, you change your mind, you broaden it and you stretch it. And we think that that's one of the benefits of abstract thinking.
So, all right, well, let's take that idea of the benefits of abstract thinking. and consider the point in the circle. The point in the circle can represent the cosmos, and the point in the circle can represent man. And a point in the circle can represent every man. And some circles have a smaller radius, some have a greater radius, some are huge, in the sense of everyday life. But what this doctrine is teaching is that the point in the circle, first of all, if each is a point in the circle, the size of the circle is irrelevant. The quantity of the circle, the quantity of circles is irrelevant. And the magnitude of the circles is irrelevant. What's relevant is when man comes to understand who he is, he realizes that he's the point. And it takes the individual to think in the most universal sense that he's the point. And so then everything other than man, which is manifestation, becomes irrelevant. So it's nowhere. And when the man gets to the point that he's thinking and he's recognizing that he, the point, is everywhere and their circumference is nowhere, then we're coming to a point with analogy. We're coming to the point where we're getting to know ourselves. When we start to understand that the point in the circle is everywhere and the circumference is nowhere, that's the place where man has come to know himself. Yes, SL.
That idea led us to think of another metaphor, that of the wheel and the axle. And you can have large wheels and you can have small wheels. You can have a wheel with the same axle, and yet its spokes can vary in length, and that wheel will move faster, will cover more distance, but the axle, the center, is the same. So that's what we have to do. We look around at others, we see something, some people seem to be moving faster, slower, have more, less than us too. But once we get to the center of our being, which is unchanging, we see that it is all one, that we are all one. And all that movement is relative and depends on that unchanging center.
Thank you. So then taking that analogy, or taking that metaphor then, while we're in manifestation, whereas qualitatively it doesn't matter the size of your wheel, nevertheless, the vehicles that we use are more or less developed. There's no difference among them in terms of their constituency. There's no difference of one person has some, you know, more of any one part. But the differences among human beings is a matter of degree. And so if we can take that and say, you know, the small wheel versus the larger wheel, well, the larger wheel can get the load moving faster and get it forward, and in that sense can be a greater contribution than it was when it was a smaller wheel and had less power. So this idea of knowing oneself and living according to the law and operating through these instruments, the self develops the instrument, and the extension of the self, the extent to which he lives according to the law, results in an instrument having greater extension, having greater faculties of perception, and being able to do more in any given life. And that's what we call the very process of evolution, to take those powers and be able to use them in service, or in more service to aid the purpose of the universal law. So we have time for one last question. Okay, well, with that, we thank you for coming, and we'll see you on Wednesday night at the Ocean of Theosophy class.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.